Hey, Anna, how would you like to go on a one-way trip to Pluto?
I'd love it. Wait, one way? Are you trying to get rid of me?
Well, you know, no, of course not. But anyway, how long would you suppose it would take you to go from Earth to Pluto?
I don't know, like a month? 2 months. Your two face, months. I'm looking 6 months.
More than that. So we have the New Horizons spacecraft, one of the fastest spacecrafts we've ever created, left Earth at over 40,000 miles an hour, and it still took 9.5 years to get there.
Well, I can't go then, because everything I'd packed would have been out of style by the time I got to Pluto, and I would look lame, and it would be like, oh, who's that, Earthling?
Yeah, but remember, it was a one-way trip. You ain't coming back.
I'm a little worried.
Sorry.
Man, it's going to happen.
Let's ready the rocket for her. She said yes. She's going.
She's interested.
That's right. From the studios of Cincinnati Public Radio, this is Looking Up, and I'm Dean Regas, co-host of Stargazers on PBS.
I'm Anna Heeman, and we're both from the Cincinnati Observatory. In this episode, we're talking with Alice Bowman from Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Laboratory and the Missions Operations Manager for the New Horizons mission to Pluto.
Yeah, so welcome to our Pluto episode. This is really exciting.
This is very exciting and going to get contentious.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, what do you think is going to happen?
I don't know.
Oh.
I just think I might have a different opinion, if you will, on this than you do.
All right. Well, what do you got for me? What do you got for me, Heyman? What do you got?
Well, trash talking already. Well, I think that Pluto was demoted unfairly, and that it definitely should be a planet. It's adorable and small on the
end. It is adorable. It's true.
I mean, look at that. It's cute.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's being bullied.
Bullied? Wow.
Yep, I do.
That hurts.
Yeah, that think hurts. How Pluto feels.
As a representative of the astronomical community, that stings.
Man.
That stings. We have not treated Pluto unfairly, by the way. We've given it every chance in the world. Every possible chance.
You did give it a chance when you made it a planet, and then you're like, take backs. Yes. It seems unfair.
Well, so this is a good time to talk about the backstory, how this all happened. You know, what happened to Pluto? Why was Pluto a planet?
Yeah, spin your yarn about why this is okay. I'm ready. I got an open mind.
Oh yeah. That sounds really open.
That's
sounds
right. Good. Wide open.
Yes.
As long as you agree with me.
So,
go ahead.
So it all began a long, long time ago in the year 1930.
It's going to take 9.5 years.
No. Nine and a half minutes. The clock's run. Okay. So a long, long time ago, a Kansas farm boy by the name of Clyde Tombaugh went to Arizona and discovered Pluto.
Oh,
and
man.
He saw it in his telescope by taking pictures of the sky, and he saw this little dot that moved from time to time and figured out this is a planet that is really, really far from the sun, and it got the name of Pluto. Mm-hmm. And so Pluto is a planet for a long time, but as we looked at it, we weren't sure exactly what it looked like because it was so far away and so tiny. All it still looked like was a little dot and even the best telescopes.
Sizes and everything.
Right. Okay. So then we tried to learn more about it. We thought, okay, Pluto's about the size of the Earth. Then we're like, the next time we looked at it, maybe it's half the size of the Earth. Then they're like, maybe it's a quarter size of the Earth. And then as time goes on, it kept getting smaller and smaller. And so one person that didn't like Pluto said, if we keep looking at Pluto, soon it'll disappear. Anyway,
so
I didn't
insane.
Think he liked that. But anyway,
no.
But we found out more as time went on that it wasn't quite this big object that we thought it was. It was just this icy ball that's very reflective of the sun, even from that far distance. So still, Pluto's a planet. Everybody's cool with it.
Yeah.
No problem. Then in
what went wrong?
Well, then in the 90s, our telescopes got better and we found these other objects are out where Pluto lives. And so there were other Pluto-like objects that started coming to be discovered. And so we're trying to figure out what are we going to do with these objects? Are we going to call them planets too?
Maybe.
Well, then enters the scene a very interesting person that you may have know of. His name is Neil deGrasse Tyson. Now, back then, people didn't know about him so much, and he was working at the Hayden Planetarium, and they made a new display where he decided Pluto was not a planet.
On his own?
On his own. Now, when I saw this, I was still a Pluto fan, and I looked on my pager or whatever it came in on.
Pager?
Well, it was a while ago.
Oh, man.
It was a while ago.
So it's been a minute.
It was the 90s or early 2000s.
Okay, cool. You looked on
flip phone. Let's say flip phone.
Which you had from...
Which I just recently got rid of. But
so it could have been last year, but okay, fine.
Let's say it was a while ago.
Fair enough.
And I look and say, you know, Pluto, not a planet, only in New York. And I thought, who does this Neil deGrasse Tyson person think he is that he can go out willy-nilly and say, no, Pluto's not a planet. We got things we got to do. We got to go through committees. We got to discuss. You can't just go on your own, Neil deGrasse Tyson. Whoever you are. That's
if that even is your name.
If that isn't your real name.
That's right.
And so he was really unapologetic. And I thought, like, man, this guy's I like him. I was like,
wait a minute.
I was like, I don't agree with what he's saying, but I like how he's saying it. I like that smooth talking he does. That's good.
Oh, man.
But anyway.
So much for standing your ground.
That's right. So I was still thinking, all right, Pluto should be a planet, but it did open up this conversation of, so what is a planet? And then a fellow by the name of Mike Brown discovers an object bigger than Pluto way out there by the name of Eris.
And oh, no.
A few other things. And so then they have to say, okay, if Pluto's going to be a planet, what are we going to do with these other things? And if Pluto stays a planet, how many of the new things are going to be planets too? And how many aren't? And what would be the cutoff? What makes a planet? What doesn't make a planet? What do you think?
Man.
This is a tough decision.
Seems like a lot.
I know, it's really tough.
So because he found something that was bigger than Pluto, that's what really was like, oh, wait, yep. Now maybe we could have backed the truck up.
Yep, okay. We got to decide. So maybe we'll make Eris a planet too, and then we'll have 10 planets. And maybe there's this other one that's almost as big called Haumea. We'll make that a planet.
Oh, man.
And then you're like, well, what's going to be the cutoff? Is size going to be the cutoff? And you just said size shouldn't matter,
right? It should not matter because Pluto's adorable.
So a group of astronomers in 2006 met to decide this and say, okay, what is a planet? What are we going to define as a planet? And
a group of astronomers
a
met.
Group, a
was
very
like a
elite.
Closed, was there like cloaks involved?
It was
like a secret meeting?
Yes.
It sounds like something very
like. It is
like
a group called the International Astronomical Union. They are the only
that's not the
official,
name.
Yes, it is.
I'm going to call them the Illuminati.
Illuminati, yes. They're the Guardians of the Galaxy is what they probably call each other.
Oh my God, you know they do.
Yeah, yeah, I know. They are. It's like Hogwarts there.
They're
I think.
Drunk with power.
And so they were meeting in Prague, of course.
Oh my gosh, that is a total closed door meeting place to meet.
Oh yeah, yeah. And so this group of astronomers in their closed door meeting decided we're going to propose that there are 12 planets in the solar system.
Okay, so, including Pluto?
Yeah. So it'd be Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, Pluto.
Okay.
Eris.
Okay.
Ceres, the largest asteroid,
uh-huh.
And Charon, the moon of Pluto.
Okay. Cool. Mm. Okay.
Yeah, that's exactly what the other people said when they heard this. They said, wait a second, you're going to put what and where? Ceres. Ceres is like 600 miles across. That's a dinky. Charon, that's a moon of Pluto. And this is something that happened at the International Astronomical Union. It was a revolution. When this proposal was so unpopular that the normally timid astronomers decided, no, we cannot stand for this. 12 planets, this is ridiculous. And they had a kind of a coup. Somebody said, oh yeah, 12 planets? Well, here's what I think you're 12 planets.
They did not have a coup.
And they're like, now this is our chance. Oh, this God. Proposal is so bad. We need to take a stand right now. Let's vote now. Pluto out.
Yeah, so wait a minute. So they went from saying there's going to be 12.
Right.
And they were like, you know what? We're going to go ahead and not only not include all of these, mm-hmm. we're going to go ahead and boot Pluto out while
mm-hmm.
we're at it.
Mm-hmm. I know. They took their chance. They'd been biding their time for years. And
the Illuminati are sneaky like
yes,
that. Everyone
yes.
knows it.
And everybody likes Neil deGrasse Tyson. So they're like,
he's wildly popular.
If we agree, maybe Neil will like us and tweet at us. That'd be great.
Is that why you're agreeing with him now, too? I asked it. I put it out there. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Neil, I love you.
come be on our show.
Yeah, that's right. Come be on our show sometime.
I'm sending Anna to Pluto.
That's right. There'll be an opening here at the soon for 9.5 years.
Oh, my God.
So they took their chance. They saw their opening and they're like, okay, time to kick Pluto out. And we've been wanting to do this for a while. They put it to a vote. 90-some% voted yay. 8-9% voted no. And that is the end of Pluto as a planet. Now, I know it's sad, but it doesn't change anything.
I'm not happy.
If Pluto's still there.
Okay, well, wait. What if you were there in your cloak at the Illuminati Galactic Overlord Conference,
right.
How would you have voted I'm putting you on the
spot. Well, yeah. First, they will never invite me to be in there.
Not after this conversation.
Not after this one. I love you, International Astronomical Union. Call me. I'm available. I'm in the book.
Tweet me.
Tweet me. I'd love to be on on your closed door meeting things. So let's say they would invite me. Then I would have, at that moment, that's tough. I got converted. That's the thing.
Yeah, so sounds like it's a real problem, actually.
I got converted that Pluto should not be a planet.
What is your reasoning?
My reasoning is that, well, the
I'm going to give you a chance.
I'm trying to think of a presidential way of saying it. You know, like
double talk.
To paraphrase, the solar system is complicated. That's what I want to say.
There's a lot of mitigating factors that would go in.
I never knew that the solar system would be so complicated.
But As an astronomer, I'm surprised to find.
But it really is. Yeah. And so we find out this new stuff, and we have to kind of go with these new discoveries. So, like, if we saw Pluto today, if we just found it out of the blue, there's no way we would have made it a planet because it's got this whole population of objects out there. Mm-hmm. And I'm a student of history, so I like to see if there's any precedent. Mm-hmm. And so this has happened before. We've kicked planets out of the Planet Club before. Back in the 1850s, we kicked out the asteroids because mm-hmm. we just kept finding more of them and more of them.
Classification, though, not one specific asteroid to be singled out.
That's a good point.
To sit alone at lunch.
Well, it's a good point.
Theoretically speaking.
We did make them all planets. So when we first found the asteroids, they mm-hmm. were planets. And so at one point, there's this old book that I found from the 1840s or 50s, mm-hmm. and it listed 23 planets in the solar system.
What? That would be a really hard mnemonic device. You know, there's like the thing for the all of them.
My very educated mother just served us 9 pizzas.
It would be like 11 more letters.
That's right.
Or whatever. 13 more.
I had pepperoni. My friend Vince had mushroom.
It'd be a whole story instead of a sentence.
So they decided as a body, this was before the International Astronomical Union, so who knows what they called themselves back then. The I don't know.
Probably the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Well, they know what galaxies were. But anyway, Starmen. We'll call them Starmen.
You should know there was no women involved.
Probably not. I hate to say it. Could be tough. But they decided that these are different population of objects. So asteroids should be asteroids. Mm-hmm. Planets should be planets. And we're at the same cusp here where we have this whole new population out where Pluto is. And Pluto is the first one we found. But now there's other ones. And what's really awesome about Pluto, planet or no planet, is we visited it and we got to see it up close and personal. And so I like to call it a world. Pluto is a mysterious, awesome, really cool world. And we got to explore it. And I can't wait to hear about all the discoveries that we've got.
That's very political, actually. I feel like that was good. I like that. That makes me feel better about it.
All right. Well, that's good. Whew. We're fortunate to welcome Alice Bowman, the New Horizons Mission Operations Manager, to talk with us some more about Pluto. Alice, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So Anna and I are super excited to talk to you about this, the mission, the New Horizons mission to Pluto, and all this, what we've learned from this little world way far away from the sun. Can you give us some of the highlights from the mission?
Oh my goodness. All the discoveries that we've made at Pluto just really exceeded at least my imagination. We've discovered layers of haze in the atmosphere, ice volcanoes, glacier fields, mountains. It's just spectacular.
Well, so this was the farthest object we've actually investigated. This was a big deal just to get this off the ground. Do you tell us what it was like on launch day for you when it finally left Earth? Was it just this great relief when it finally took off?
It was a great relief. We actually had proposed it in 2001, awarded the program in 2002, and then spent the next 4 years designing, developing, testing it, and finally launched. On the third day of our launch window, January 19th, 2006, it was pretty spectacular. We had some, of course, drama associated with
drama. What was the drama? Tell us. We want the dirt.
This sounds good. Yeah.
The spacecraft is powered by a nuclear power source. Mm-hmm. And because of that, there's a lot of regulations that have to be satisfied before you can even launch. And then even on launch day, you have to launch during the day. You have to have a clear line of sight to the rocket and the spacecraft. So that means you can't have any cloud cover, rain, or anything like that. And on the third day that when we launched, there was cloud cover, and we had a two-hour launch window, which means that we had to launch within those 2 hours in order to get on the trajectory that we wanted to be on.
Wow, is that fine time, fine amount of time?
And this little hole opened up in the clouds right near the end of the launch window, and we went.
Was that scary? Like, was it nerve-wracking? Because you have to, like, squeeze it. I'm not good under pressure, so I'm just... Were you guys like, it's fine, it's going to be fine?
Oh, yeah,
or was it
no
like,
problem.
Ah, let's just do it?
Well, we had about a three-week launch window. Of course,
okay.
We wanted to go in the very beginning of the launch window because mm-hmm. that allowed us to use Jupiter as a gravity assist, which allowed us to gain 9,000 miles per hour and shorten our transit time by 3 years. So, you know, it was a 9.5-year mission to get to Pluto, and if we didn't launch in the very first part of that launch window, it would have taken us an additional 3 years to get there.
Wow,
oh,
so we'd still be waiting for the rendezvous.
You're right. I hadn't thought about that. We'd actually, let's see, so 15... Three, so it would be next summer.
Oh my gosh! Jeez. Good thing the clouds parted. That's really exciting. Now, as an outsider watching this, like, I'd followed the other Pluto missions that were on paper. They were trying to get one, built for years and years and years, and just kept getting unfunded and defunded. And then when this launch, I have to tell you, I like got super excited because once it left that launch pad, I thought, Congress is not going to stop this now. There's no turning back now. I don't know if you can say that or not, but did you feel a little bit something like that of relief?
I did. Of course, I wasn't part of that Pluto Underground that Alan Stern and his cohorts had put together in 1989 and been trying to get a mission since that time. So I am sure that everybody that was involved in that was super excited. For me, it was just represented years of work that we put into this mission. And, of course, we had a long road ahead of us because, you know, it was going to take us so long to get there.
Yeah, so that was kind of something we were talking about. So it takes 9.5 years to get there, you'd mentioned. So what is a normal day like waiting for it to get there? Is it like playing a little solitaire on the computer, like having a coffee? Like, I mean, what are you guys doing? Like, while are you tracking it? Are you waiting? Like, what was kind of a typical day while you're waiting for it to get there, those 9 years?
Well, that's a very interesting question because we had gotten that. We had, after the, you know, when you launch a spacecraft, you do a commissioning of all the components and mm-hmm. then the instruments. And that just means you're checking them out, making sure that you, that they're all working as they should be. Mm-hmm. And after we did that, immediately we started planning for the Jupiter gravity assist.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, how long did it take to get to Jupiter from Earth?
Oh, it was very quick, 13 months.
13 months. Well,
see, very quick. 13
for
short
me,
months.
I was like, what? That's awesome. That's super fast. I mean, because this was the fastest spacecraft we've ever made. Isn't that right?
Fastest spacecraft launched from Earth.
Launched
man-made
from Earth.
Object. 36,000 miles per hour.
And so you get to Jupiter. And it got a gravity assist. So it kind of went around Jupiter. And were you able to test out some of the instruments that way, too?
Yes, and that was a good test of our commanding systems on the ground, our operational structure here, as well as, you know, training those instruments on the moons of Jupiter. I mean, there's a lot to choose from at Jupiter. And so it gave us a chance to see, even though those instruments were built for the lighting conditions on Pluto, which are much dimmer than Jupiter, we were still able to get some pretty fantastic pictures of Jupiter and its moons. My favorite is of Io, where we captured the Tvar Star volcano erupting. And that was
that's cool.
Just amazing.
It's really cool.
Well, and so then after Jupiter, you have 8 more years of twiddling your thumbs and waiting, right? And then...
Yeah, that's what you would think.
And it was I know. I mean, there's a lot of other stuff getting ready. Was there any tense moments? Was there a moment, where it looked
more
like
drama.
More drama? We always like more drama
right.
on the show.
Yeah. Well, this mission employs a hibernation concept in order to really save money and lifetime on the components. And so we had planned the first hibernation period after Jupiter. And so we had to test out that hibernation period. We actually experienced our first safe mode, which is a mode that spacecraft goes into when it there's a fault detected on board the spacecraft. We experienced that first one right after Jupiter. Our flyby was closest approach with Jupiter was February 28th. Weeks later, we experienced our first safe mode.
Ooh, but you got it back and rebooted.
We did. Yes, we did, and we had experienced some along the way. You can imagine with that, you know, 9.5 year mission to Pluto, we did experience some faults. We actually loaded new software to the main computer in 2013 to address some of the safe mode that we had experienced.
Well, and so you just turn it off and turn it back on again, right? Isn't that what they do with all the computers? Flip it on, flip it on, and you hear the Windows thing.
That's right. Well, essentially, that's what the safe mode one of those does. We were having a main computer reset, and essentially that's what your computer, what you do when you push that button. And so we traced that to something very deep in the operating system, and that was we could attribute to about 25% of these safe modes that we had encountered. And so because this is a flyby mission, you only have one chance to get it right. Even though we were very far from Earth, we thought the risk of loading new software to the main computer outweighed the risk of experiencing this type of fault when we were at Pluto. So,
and so then you're only you're a few days away from the pass, and I've heard something else happened. another slight error that turned everybody's hair gray and aged them years.
Yes. We did.
Now you're making her talk
about
these things.
I know. She's like, oh no, not that
like
again.
Like a happy interview about the
I forgot all about those things. It's coming back.
I blocked them out.
I'm sorry.
If it's too hard, sleep.
If it's too hard, we can skip over it.
It's like experiencing all the emotions that I felt at the time. Every time I recount the story, I feel those.
Oh, wow.
You know, what happened was this flyby sequence is 9 days long, and it collects the absolute best science of the Pluto system.
Oh, wow.
Closest approach is on July 14th, 2015, and this 9-day flyby sequence starts on July 7th. It takes up 80% of the memory space that we devote to a set of commands that are executing out of memory to accomplish these things. So that means we only have 20% that we can use on the set of commands leading up to this 9-day period. And that translated to just 4 days. We had to wait until that 20% memory started being used, because then that meant that the 80% was free for us to load up this 9-day sequence. And that happened to be that first opportunity to load the 9-day sequence to the main computer was on July 4th.
Not too many days before. And so, yeah, you fly 9.5 years to get there and 9 days of data all crunched at one time.
Well, we actually started observing the Pluto system in January of 2015, but the very intense science.
I thought this was a happy story because it was on July 4th being like 4th of July. No, and I was like, that's neat.
That means it was 10 days before it got there.
Meanwhile, Dean's like, oh my gosh, he like looks panicked. And I'm like, this is beautiful.
I mean, here they are. They're sitting there. They're playing solitaire. They have 10 days to go.
Talking about American Idol.
And then the alarms go off. Beep, 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 beep. It's over.
Oh, man.
And they made it through.
Yeah, you know, you would think alarms, but no. The worst fear in an operations world is nothing. Silent.
Oh, really? Oh, man.
So you're calling it and calling it. It's not calling back?
Yep. We lost contact with the spacecraft.
Oh, my gosh.
And then how did you get it back?
Well, you know, we're engineers. We have our process. We just started delving into what possibly could be wrong. And our autonomy engineer, who's the gentleman that coded that fault protection system on the spacecraft, I asked him what were the things that could be most likely be happening given what we were doing, and he narrowed it down to two for me. Thank God, because we had many, many fault branches that we could have gone down. And one of those, he said, we could, we have seen before in flight, and the other one we had not.
Wow.
And when he told me what the one we hadn't seen in flight before was, my heart sank. I said, oh God, I hope we aren't experiencing that one.
That's the calmest way I've ever heard someone. Like, I would seriously be outer limits. Like, I feel like I don't know you very well. We just started talking. You have a very calming influence, Alice. You have a very calming presence. I can already tell. I would have been like, we've lost it. Everything's done. Pack up your stuff. I would be freaking out.
You would have been like, who did this? Whose fault is in this room right now? Step forward. You're fired.
Put your hands up. I mean, that is like, I can't imagine all that work and all that time. And then you just being like, well, I hope it's not that one. Like, that's amazing.
Let's get her past the bad times.
Yes.
What were you in for? So as you fly by and everything worked great, what kind of came forward for you? How do you feel? Do you know Pluto now? What do you think of Pluto?
Oh my gosh. I mean, it was interesting before because we'd never been that far from Earth or explored a Kuiper Belt object, but oh my goodness, it's the most amazing place. It's much more Earth-like. Because you have the mountains, you have the plains, you have the ice fields, you have the atmosphere, you have the blue sky. You know, I think of all the years that we spent trying to get a mission to Pluto. When I was a schoolgirl, I was taught that Pluto was just a gray rock because that's basically all we could see from Earth.
Oh, wow.
But it turned out to be so much more. And the thought that there are many other objects out there beyond Pluto that could be like Pluto or hold even more wonders is just so exciting. I'm ready to go.
Yeah. And so what's next for New Horizons? It's not, the mission's not over, correct?
No. We were granted an extension, funded for an extended mission in July of 2016. And we are now off to 2014 MU69. And that is a small Kuiper Belt object, about 20 miles in diameter. So whereas Pluto was about 1,440 miles in diameter, this is a very much smaller object. And so the idea is to compare the King of the Kuiper Belt objects to this very small object and look at the differences between the two. So MU69 is a billion miles beyond Pluto. At Pluto, our round-trip light time was a little less than 9 hours, and round-trip light time is the time it takes us to send a command to the spacecraft at Pluto and then to have that acknowledgement received back on Earth. So it was a little less than 9 hours at Pluto, which is 3 billion miles from Earth, and MU69, which is about 4 billion miles from Earth, that round-trip light time will be on the order of about 12 hours and 15 minutes.
Wow. Wow.
Jeez.
And when's it going to be arriving, or when's it passing by?
Closest approach is January 1st, 2019. So it's coming up very quickly. We spent, about 7 years planning the encounter, those 9 days of encounter with Pluto. And here we don't have very much time.
Yeah, it's going to be a fast flyby. And I know it was cool that you could redirect the New Horizons and kind of just shoot it off to the side and go by this other object. I think that's awesome to have another one to compare to.
Oh, it's great. It's great. And who knows what this one's going to look like.
Yeah, well, we'll have to have you come back in 2019, because we want the update. Because I think both of us got kind of like misty when you were describing Pluto. Like, you were like moved by this world. And
you had me at Icy Volcanoes.
Yeah.
So that sounds cool.
There we go.
No pun intended. I meant it sounds neat.
Yes. But thanks so much for talking with us today. This was great, learning all about Pluto and the mission and getting the behind the scenes
exciting
drama.
Oh, sure. And thanks so much for having me. I'll be happy to come back.
Thank you.
Well, we've been talking with Alice Bowman, the Missions Operations Manager for the New Horizons mission. Thanks so much for talking with us, Alice.
Thank you. Well, the Cincinnati Observatory has been around since the mid-1800s, so you can only imagine the many letters we've received in that time, and some that include some very interesting questions, or we'll say some unique beliefs.
Oh yeah, exactly. I mean, our astronomers have been, collecting these letters and articles since the beginning, mm-hmm. and they reserved a special file for the
I don't know, let's say unique points of view, the weird theories, and they called it the crank file. So I'm going to pull out the a little thing from the crank file. At least it was very close to it. And it's a newspaper article from August 25th, Berkeley, California. And the first sentence is, the downgrading of Pluto from its 26-year-old position as a planet in the solar system continues. So that means
persecution has been going on for so long.
August 25th, 1956 was the date of this article. So wow. Pluto had only been a planet for 26 years, and they were said it has been debated continuously. This is 1956, and Pluto was a planet for another 50 years after that. So what's interesting is—
they did kind of take their time.
Yeah. They're like—
they don't want to rush to judgment. They're
well,
like—
that's true.
Let's pump the brakes on this whole thing.
Astronomers are very patient people, that's for sure. So 50 years, they're like, woo, what's the hurry, buddy? What are you doing here? So, well, what's more interesting about this article is who is one of the advocates for the anti-planet thing. It was a Dr. Eugene K. Robbie of the University of Cincinnati Observatory.
Oh, my gosh.
Is against Pluto being a planet in 1956. And he'd been studying the orbit of Pluto for a long time, along with a Dr. Kuiper, who is also known for naming the Kuiper Belt out where Pluto lives. And so the two of them are in agreement that Pluto should not be a planet. They believe that Pluto was an escaped moon of Neptune's. So it was orbiting around Neptune and had fled away from there and went off on its own, because Pluto and Neptune do have a kind of interesting relationship. Mm-hmm. Neptune has moved Pluto in its past, but to where it is today,
what do you
actually
mean it's moved it.
It yeah,
it, like it's like bumped it.
Yep, it's like not physically, but its gravitational reach has like kind of shoved it to where it is. And so actually, Pluto, where it is today, is kind of in this gravitational wake. It's like Neptune allows Pluto to be there. And Dr. Rabe was seeing this, and he thought, okay, well, the obvious answer is that Pluto used to be a moon of Neptune. This is still not today has been debated a little bit. It's not really the final end-all be-all. We think now that we know there's so much other stuff out where Pluto is, we think Pluto and this other stuff just formed independently. But this was the big theory, and this was his idea. Is that, well, if Pluto can't be a planet because it used to be a moon— what do you think? Good reason?
No.
No, not at all?
Okay, it's fine. It's all right.
No, no. You can say no, because obviously the astronomers weren't convinced, because it took them 50 more years.
50 more years to say, yeah, maybe you're right.
They weren't like, Dr. Rabe's right. This shouldn't be a planet.
That's
there,
right.
There was a lot more debate, but it was interesting that I found this from 50-something, now it's 60-something years ago that they were debating. And the fact that they're saying the debate continues as if this had been something going on for a long time.
Yeah, that the title saying the downgrading of Pluto continues. It's like, has Pluto ever had a moment's peace where it just can just be a planet? I know.
And then we go send a spacecraft past it and take pictures of it and all that stuff. And well, luckily now I think it's going to be at peace, because I don't know if we're going to see it. We're not going to go by it anytime soon. But
who cares about it now? It's not even a thing.
Well, let's see if the debate continues, because I think we might have some folks that still really want Pluto to be a planet. And one of those people might be in this very room.
Could be.
I didn't convince you of one thing.
Oh, well, you know, I mean, I'm entertaining it, but nope.
Nope.
Well, that's it for this episode of Looking Up. Thanks to Alice Bowman for joining us. And get in touch with us. We're on Twitter at Looking Up Podcast, or drop us a note at lookingup@wvxu.org.
Ask us a question, give us a topic suggestion, or ask your kids what they'd like to ask an astronomer or scientist, and we'll try to answer those on future episodes.
And remember to subscribe to Looking Up on iTunes, and please take a moment to rate or comment on us there, or on Stitcher, or from wvxu.org. Our theme song and additional music is by Why, that's W-H-Y, from their album Moline, courtesy of Joyful Noise Recordings and Terror Bird Media.
Looking Up is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. Kevin Reynolds is our producer, and Josh Elstro and Rick Andrus are our engineers.
Thanks for listening. I'm Anna Heeman.
And I'm Dean Regis. Keep looking up.